is OMM Patriots Monday. Time for our conversation with Bill Belichick, being brought to you by Massachusetts General Hospital Cancer Center. Every day amazing by the Northeast Men's Clinic, specializing exclusively in men's sexual health. McFarland Energy, Fraser Engineering, great people doing great work, and by your Boston area Mercedes-Benz dealers. Bill, how are we doing today?
Good, Glenn. Good. Kristen, Lou, how's it going?
Good.
So what do you do on bye weekend when you get a few days off? Do you get totally away from this and get your head absorbed in something other than football? Or do you sit there and start going over Jets film? What do you do?
Yeah, a little bit of both. It's good to get ahead a little bit, but it's also good to forget about football for a few hours.
Can you decompose?
A few hours.
I was going to say, can you decompose? You're in the middle of the football season. It seems to me like your head is in football, football, football. How the hell do you decompose for even a couple days?
Yeah, well, it's not that hard. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, there's definitely a saturation level. It's good to back it off for a little bit and then get refreshed.
Do you get away for a couple days?
A little bit. Maybe a day.
Yeah.
I know any time's a good time for a bye week, but I used to love the bye week when it came after the eighth game, like that halfway point, right? And you guys have six games left in the regular season where really guys are getting healthy at the right time. I mean, is that the ideal scenario for you? You know, is having like a, I guess I would be a short push, right? Because I remember one time we had it for the second game when I was in Seattle. It was a nightmare.
Yeah, well, they gave it to us early there in 2001. They gave it to us the last week.
That's right. Have you ever seen a team who has it like, I want to say the San Diego Chargers 1 year had it, their first week was a bye week, like years ago.
Yeah.
So they went 16 straight, went right out of camp. Had a bye week, and then went
good
six.
As that, right?
Kind of defeats the purpose, doesn't it?
Wait, do you have any control? Can you, like, no? They just, it's all based
well, the
on?
Well, the only control you have is if you play in the Europe game, then you get it the following week. So when we played Tampa and the Rams in London, we had it the following week. Remember, that was Hurricane Sandy 1 year. And you're right. Anytime's a good time. Whenever you get it, you get it, so. Be happy with it and move on.
So the Jets, obviously Jet Week, big week for you guys. But do you, with the extra time, do you spend any time looking ahead, any homework, looking ahead to maybe that following week? Or is it all just about the Jets, like an extra week and a half, 2 weeks for the Jets?
Well, the way the schedule falls, Lou, the Jets have played a couple teams that we're going to play. So they played Buffalo last week. We still have them. They played Miami a couple weeks ago. We have them. They played Minnesota. We have them. So... there's some crossover games there that as we watch the Jets, we also see somebody else.
Do you sit down and watch that Minnesota game last night like the rest of us do, or do you just say, I'll see it later on?
I saw some of it, yeah. I lasted until about the third middle of the third quarter. That was all I could. Couldn't last longer than that.
Did you gain anything from... like Chris Collinsworth, like the analysts, like when they're breaking stuff down, you're like, ooh, that's a good point. Do you watch it as a fan, or are you critiquing as you go?
Yeah. It's hard to TV scout. I mean, occasionally they give you some good insight. You know, they talk to somebody and maybe they comment on, well, this is how the coach said we were going to do this, or this is how players said we're going to do that. But I'd say for the most part, that's just as a fan, you're just kind of watching it.
So you talked last week about first week of the bye week is getting your own act together, your own team. So getting healthy would be the biggest positive going forward. But what else do you believe is something you need to do here if you're going to be successful and reach your goal?
Well, the big thing we want to do is just try to improve, and we can do that in every area. So we've looked at those offensively, defensively, special teams, running game, passing game. Fundamentals, tendencies, so forth. So I think we'll take action where we can this week. Some of those things that we looked at won't apply this week. Some of them will. And we'll just take it week by week here.
How important is that? We were talking about this earlier. How important is the running game? You had a game in which you took a wide receiver and you used him as a running back because you had injuries. How important is establishing that running game to take the pressure off of Brady and your passing game, to be able to make that defense play honestly, Bill, and open up what we believe is a really potent offense?
Well, if you can be successful at it, it's good. I don't personally believe that you do something just to do it, just for the sake of doing it. Our goal is to move the ball and score points. So if we're doing that, if they're all runs or if they're all passes, that doesn't really matter to me as long as we move the ball and score points. If they're balanced, that's fine too. So we'll just have to see. Again, some of that depends on where we're at. Some of it depends on what we're seeing from our opponents.
Is it important, though, to get the defense of the opponent to respect what you're doing in a running game? If they know that you can't run or they don't feel that you're capable of doing it.
Well, if they're not defending the run, then you've got to be able to run it. That's right. And if you can't, then they'll continue to not defend it, and you'll probably be throwing against something that you don't want to throw at. But if they're going to put everybody on the line of scrimmage and have more guys than you can block up there, I don't know how many times you want to run it in there for 1 yard just to say, well, we ran it. I don't really think that is the answer.
You know, I think last week reporters were asking you about special teams and kick returns and where you guys rank, and it's just not normally a Patriot team. I think it was 29th in kick return. The new rule, not being able to run up, how much of a role is that playing into it versus obviously just being better at it, coaching it up better, but just not being able to run up, is that affecting the kick returns, those guys getting more of a return because of it?
Well, I think the rules have affected the return game a little bit, but we're all playing on the same rules, so we have to do a better job of coaching and playing and executing than what we have.
But maybe more so in the past, do you think of, well, we got a guy that can kick out of the end zone, let's just do that and start at 25 and go from there?
Well, that's again, that's a possible strategy. I would say there's times that we're going to be playing in the next 6 weeks where that just wouldn't be possible.
Because of weather?
Yeah. And I think the last six games, five of the six anyway, we played one in Miami, but five of the six are in potentially cold weather days with wind. So that may affect the kicking game more than what it has in some of the previous 10 that we've played. So we'll have to see how that goes. There's no way to predict it, but it's certainly a possibility. Something we have to be more aware of than you would be in your September games.
Is that, for the special teams, is it specifically kickoff and kickoff return? Is it one of those situations, is it more scheme, or is it personnel, or is it a mix of the two?
No, I think we have enough players. I think we've been good at times. We just haven't been consistent, so we have to coach it better. We have to execute it better, and we're going to be seeing good returners certainly this week with Roberts, but we'll be seeing good returners here all the way through till the end of the season, so our coverage units are going to be challenged every week, which they normally are in the National Football League, but they certainly will be the next 6 weeks. So we'll find out where we're at.
When there's no tackling, you know, really at all anymore, and especially how tough it is to, I guess, coach up, how do you, how do you coach these guys up as far as just making it work when you can't physically tackle them? Because tagging off is one thing on a guy that's running, you know, a 4-4 or whatever, and actually trying to tackle that guy in space is a whole other thing. Is there a specific way that you guys go about teaching them how to handle those situations?
Well, we work on tackling every day. So, we work on it. We emphasize it. And, you know, we got to do a better job of it. But we're working on it every day since first day of training camp, since even in the spring. It's the most important fundamental there is, running and tackling. So we constantly work on those.
This is a random question, and I had a debate with this guy about this like last week. Okay, you're the first guy down, you're a gunner or whatever. You're the first guy down on the punt team. Wide open space. Would you throw at a guy and almost burn that guy down just to make the running back, the punt returner, kind of move around and slow down? Or would you expect that person to, I guess, break down and try to make a tackle? Like, what's the coaching point there? Throwing at a guy right away like a bullet, like a missile, just to try and see if you can make a play, or should that person break down right beforehand?
Well, I think there's a little bit of a gray area there. It depends on how good of a shot you have at the runner. But let's just say he has a little bit of time and space to avoid you. Then what we would want to do is maintain some type of leverage on the runner.
So where you're diving at the person would be fine, yeah, so as long as you want to send them like to the sideline.
That's right. So if I'm on the right side of you, I want to keep him from going to my right and push him back to the left, because any teammates that I have, if they see me over there, they kind of expect me to hold that leverage. And if I lose it, then they've committed to another spot, and now I've lost what I have, and now who takes that over. So,
so I was technically right.
Oh, on the,
yeah, of course. So,
well, you did say it was a gray area.
I said dive.
I'd like to hear what the other guy said in this argument.
It doesn't matter.
That might pay off. People have been asking you about ball distribution because it looks a little bit different than what we've seen in the past. You've always said that Tom Brady throws to the open guy. There are certain things and certain way that we play, but we want to go to the open guy. Do you feel to this point that's the way the ball has been distributed, or is that something that you feel needs to be improved on?
Well, I think we can do better in every area, running game, passing game, run defense, pass defense, special teams. So we've addressed everything, looked at everything, and talked to each of our players about areas that they can improve in. And hopefully we'll have more production in the passing game. Hopefully we'll have more production in the running game. Hopefully we'll score more points.
Is there a guy so far, just call it the midway point, that's lived up to expectations or actually exceeded your expectations based on what you thought they were capable of doing when the season started?
I don't know. I've really thought about that, Christian. I'd say right now what our mentality is where everybody, wherever anybody is right now, coaches, players, whatever their role is, let's try to move past it and move into higher ground. Let's try to improve by 5, 10%, each one of us, all 70 of us, including the coaches and practice squad players, 75, however many it is. Let's all of us try to improve 5, 10%. What can we do better? How can we contribute more or contribute at a higher level than we're contributing right now? And I think if we all do that, the team will benefit greatly.
So, Coach, Matt Patricia had his team coach outside in the snow, and their next five games are all indoors. You guys is different. You guys have to perform in that weather. But when you go out and practice in bad weather rather than, say, indoors, is it more than just preparing for cold weather? Do you do that, too, to test your guys, like mentally, kind of to find out, guys, I don't want to hear you make complaining, bitching, making excuses? Is that part of the reasons why you would do something like that as well?
Well, the majority of our games are outdoors, Lou, so whatever the conditions are, they are. We can't control them. So if we practice in them, I think eventually we're going to play in them. I don't know when. It might be this week. It might be next week. Might be next year. Again, those things are not that easily predictable, but at some point we're going to face wind, we're going to face cold, we're going to face heat, we're going to face the sun, we're going to have to, you know, we're going to have to deal with all those conditions. So we go out there and practice in them. If that whenever they come up, then we're ready for them.
You will face the sun because you're playing at 1 o'clock, you're playing at 4, well, 4 o'clock might
be
difficult.
Saying, like, Hamlin kicks in the sun and that type of thing, that came up in the Chicago game.
How different do you coach, and you've had great success in December, in late November, how different do you coach because you're playing against, in the cold weather, and you might be playing against some teams that are not accustomed to playing in the cold weather? How different do you coach in this weather as opposed to earlier in the season?
Well, sometimes the weather affects what you can or can't do, so you have to take that into consideration. But ultimately, it comes down to the players and their ability to execute the plays. So if we can execute them, great. If we can't execute them, then we pull them out and try to do something that we can't execute. So throwing 50-yard post patterns into a 20-mile-an-hour wind, that's not the time for that play. Maybe it's when you're going in the other direction or what have you. So throwing outside routes, if you have a swirling tough wind like we had in Buffalo, sometimes those limit the number of throws or the type of throw that a quarterback can make out there. So it changes the way you might defend it and also changes what you call on that. Maybe adjust the route instead of running out route. Maybe you run a shorter route that's a hitch, that's a little tighter throw, that's a little more direct throw for the quarterback, as an example.
Will you guys change up the schedule this week because it's Thanksgiving? You guys work that day, you know, put in a bunch of work beforehand, then come back on Friday?
We'll try to get ahead a little bit so we aren't doing as much on Thanksgiving.
This is our question.
Drive of the week.
This is we're going to wrap things up with our
Mercedes-Benz
drive of the week. Yeah, was that your favorite part?
Yeah, it was great. That was a good drive.
Well, I guess I'll end with this. I had this debate with Little Earl over here. That's his nickname, if you're wondering. And you know, a lot of these analysts put so much faith in all these different, you know, companies, that Pro Football Focus and, you know, Statcast or whatever it is. And I was thinking that the only way you can really get the true analysis of whether a guy is good or not is if the coach gives you the answers. Like, the coach is going to have to give you a grade on that player, because only you know if he was doing the right thing or not, or if he should have caught the ball or not. So how does that guy know? Do you think there'll come a point, that at some point in time, that where your guys' grades will be public knowledge?
Yeah, well, I would just my.
I don't know why you're laughing at that question.
No, I like it.
I think it's a great question. So you see a play on film, and a receiver goes uncovered down the field. So you know that it's probably one of two guys' mistakes, but you don't necessarily know which guy it is, right?
Yeah.
And so, but a lot of times you see the announcers say, well, you know, Fourier should have taken him or Belichick should have taken him. And I'm looking at the play saying, well, it could have been either guy. It just depends on what the call was and what they were doing. A lot of times we look at our plays and we see a mistake there. Maybe we come off the field and, you know, a guy makes a tackle in the backfield and we're like, oh my God, this guy made a mistake. And then he tells us that, well, no, at the line we called something else, and so it wasn't him. It was actually another guy. So, and a lot of times on film we see that. We see a mistake, and then we say, well, you know, we have to go back and hear what the call was before we can. We know somebody's wrong here, but it just depends on what the call was as to which guy's right and which guy's wrong. And so a lot of times we don't know what happened until Monday. We know there's a problem on the play, but until you actually talk to the players and say, okay, what happened on this play? Oh, I thought he said this, or, oh, I, you know, he said it, I didn't hear it, or he said this, but I played that, whatever it is. So you're right. In terms of analytics, you get a lot of, you know, this guy should have them, that guy should have them. But I know from our team, there are times when we don't know exactly what went wrong until you can really sort the play out. So there's no way anybody else could know is the point. And that's sometimes what it looks like is not what it is. And then you often see, you know, players, defensive backs, somebody gets behind the defense for a touchdown and they kind of pull off or don't chase because I don't want to really be chasing the guy because it looks like it was their guy, you know, that type of thing. You know, so there are some plays like that that kind of definitely skew it. And a lot of times they're big plays. So it's an interesting question and it's an interesting point about, you know, who's at fault, who does what. And it's pretty common for that to be it's pretty frequent that comes up. So, like, a lot of times you have the center slides one way on pass protection, right? So you have a center guard and a tackle blocking a defensive tackle and a defensive end, right? So you're 3-on-2. And so if one of those guys comes inside, you know, you just have to know what the rule is, and it might be different from our team to the next team as to, is the tackle turning that guy over to the guard or is he staying with him? Is the guard turning that guy over to the center or is he staying with him and the center's helping him? You know, so is it 2-on-1 or is it I let him go to the next guy and then I you know, push out? So, and again, unless you know exactly how that's being coached and what they're supposed to do, then it's hard to know who's right and who's wrong. Same thing happens on punt protection as well. You know, you see guys come through and a lot of times it's like, oh, well, this guy should have blocked them. But depending on what the rules are on the punt protection and what the rush was, in other words, is he going to stay on the down guy or are we going to area the down guy and the stack guy? There could be two different ways to do it, and you might not know exactly who was responsible for what until you know how it's coached.
Well, I was going to say, and sometimes you just got to trust the player because you were mic'd up one time on that touchdown pass from Gordon, that Brady threw to Gordon, and you even asked him coming off, who did you throw it to? And I'm sure he would never admit that he was overthrew Jules, right? So, of course, he's going to admit that, no, I didn't overthrow him. It was a perfect pass. So you got to trust the player sometimes.
Yeah, and which I do. It's just when I saw Julian jump for the ball, I thought that he thought it was going to him, and then it kind of went over, and then it was a little short for Gordon and a little long for Julian. But then when I went back and watched the play on film, I think Tom was definitely throwing it to Gordon. Yeah. But on the field at the time, I wasn't sure. I mean, it's unusual to have two guys open like that. You're hoping for one, and you know, luckily we had two there.
So we in the media, we get it wrong all the time because we don't know exactly what the specific assignments are.
Glenn, we get it wrong, too. We're watching another team on film, and we've watched all their plays, and we're still at times not sure exactly who was supposed to do what. But I'll say this. If you see a certain player involved in multiple plays like that, it doesn't really matter what it was supposed to be. It's probably they're just going to have problems with it because you know, certain players involved in multiple mistakes. Whatever the call was, that, you know, you just want to keep putting stress on that player, maybe those, that combination of players. For example, when you have linebackers that are moving out into combinations with defensive backs, a lot of times the linebackers, because he's not a defensive back and he's not in there with the defensive backs all the time, and he's involved in a 3-on-3 or a 4-on-3 situation, sometimes he'll make the mistake. Whereas if it was 3 DBs or 4 DBs, they'd have a better line of communication, right, or better anticipation of what the call was going to be, how to handle it.
So Christian wants to solve all the inequities in the world, and what he wants you to do is, you as a coach, instead of having report cards by the media, he wants you to give a report card in each player, even the negative grades. I'm not sure you're going to do that. Is that well, safe to know, say? You're not doing that?
I mean, I know, Christian, you know, you've sat in a lot of those meetings, and sometimes you kind of run into conflict as a coach where you look at the play and, all right, so let's say defensively, you know, the end is, he sort of does his job. The tackle sort of does his job. Linebacker sort of does his job. The linebacker sort of does his job. And he gains 6 yards. And you're like, wait a minute. Like, they're kind of doing what they're supposed to do. Like, there's nobody here that's really bad, but they just gained 6 yards. And, you know, we can't have, like, every play can't gain 6 yards and everybody does their job, right? So then there's got to be a little bit higher standard of, you know, what's a high grade or what's an acceptable grade and what isn't. And that's a fine line. It really is, because the players can go out there and do their job, and then they could do a great job of it. They could do a, like, you know, solid job, and or it could be, well, it's not perfect, but it's kind of okay. And then, of course, there's the obvious one that it's just, you know, it's you get beat.
Disaster.
That's, yeah. Well, so, and we all get beat. So that's, but I'd say there's a gradation in there between, you know, grade to, you know, A, B, and C, let's call it. So, you know, maybe C's a passing grade, but are you really going to win playing C football? You know, B's good, might be good enough sometime. A, you know, you're looking at that, but it's hard to get straight A's out there. I mean, you got some other A players too. So the grading part of it's a fine line. It really is.
Does each coach grade differently?
Sure. Well,
or do you give them a template? So this is the way, so you can evaluate them, right?
Yeah, well, I think each let's call it minus, is, you know, has a comment with it, so that you can identify again. Well, maybe this was a minus, but I might look at it and say, well, you know, it wasn't really that bad. I mean, he didn't quite get it the way, but he's trying, and it was, you know, just one of those things that, you know, whatever happened, but it didn't go. And then there are other ones that are just, they're just bad plays, or they're really, really good plays. But all I'm saying is there's a lot of gray in there between some pluses and minuses, and between, you know, how players are graded. And you get these organizations that grade all the players. And to me, I'm thinking to myself, I mean, I have a hard time grading the players, and I know what the call is. There are other things that happen on the field that that override that by a lot. And until you know what those are, you can't really grade accurately.
You ever had a guy with a perfect score?
Well, look, if you're a corner, you know, you might only be involved in 5 plays a game. I mean, it's not like you're playing nose tackle.
Game ball. Perfect score.
Well, but, you know.
It's not my fault. They're scared of me, coach. They won't throw my way.
Yeah, sometimes there are, you know, no opportunities, same thing. You know, so if, you know, there's some players that are involved in a lot of plays, you know, middle linebacker or a center or guard. I mean, they're, every single play goes through them. And then there are other plays. If you have defensive ends, I mean, if the ball runs one way, the other guys, unless they run a reverse, I mean, the other guy's really not that involved in it. He has a responsibility to do. But if you're the backside corner or backside receiver, I mean, you've seen a receiver grades. Like, how do you get a minus as a receiver? You know, drop the ball.
Yeah.
I mean, that's about it. You know, otherwise, if you run your 10-yard route or run your 15-yard route or whatever it is, then, well, you've kind of, you know, done your assignment. So, you know, if you drop the ball, then obviously that's a minus. But so I'm just saying there's a difference between, and so really a lot of those plays are, let's call them zeros. I mean, they're really not gradable plays. You want the plays, what's the grade on the plays where the player's actually involved in the play. So for corners and wide receivers, their opportunities are a lot less than for interior linemen, linebackers, guys like that, quarterback. I mean, on a running play, unless he misses the handoff or something, I mean, he's really not really, he could screw the play up. I'm not saying that. But generally speaking, that play now belongs to the runner. that's a passing play, and then that play belongs to the quarterback.
So when you get one of those disastrous plays, players, ex-players have told us, no names, that you like to show video to everybody. Are there certain guys that you know that you can play the video, and that player is going to learn from it and improve? And there are other guys that you're a little bit concerned that if you show it in front of everybody else, as opposed to maybe sitting and talking to them privately?
Well, I think that's a great question, Glenn. I think that's a great question. And I think the answer to that question is if you have a team of 11 people on a particular play, and something goes wrong on that play, right, then look, there's the one person who made a mistake, but there's 10 other people, too, that you're also coaching. So when something goes wrong on a play like that, your immediate reaction of, if you're one of the 11 players on the field, is, you know, did I do something wrong? Should I have been there? Should I have had that? Should I have done this? And so I think there's a lot to be said to making sure that we understand who made the mistake. Like, okay, this is Belichick's fault. Everybody else is okay. You have to get this corrected. Or there's times where I've said to the team, look, this is just bad coaching. This is a bad play in this situation. I'm not going to call this again. This is my fault. Just forget about this one. Okay, this is on me. All right, let's move forward here. And, you know, I'm not going to call this again in that situation. I put you in a bad spot. That's just as bad coaching. And a lot of times players will come off and say the same thing. It's like, look, I screwed this up. I should have made the play. I was right there. I missed the tackle. Call it again. I'll get it the next time. Okay, great. And then there are the ones that sometimes are a little bit harder to determine. Well, I was doing what I thought I was supposed to do. Next guy's doing what he thought he's supposed to do. Next guy's doing what he's supposed to do. And they gain 15 yards. Mm-hmm. Well, there's something wrong. We have to fix that. And so if I just take one guy over in the corner and say, hey, look, you just do this. Well, then what about the other 10 guys? You know, do they know that we have the problem fixed? Or because if you don't identify what's happened wrong, then a lot of times another player will try to make an adjustment. So it's everyone the same play again. Now he makes an adjustment because he does something different than he did the last time because he thinks it was wrong.
Right.
Right. So he now needs to know, okay, you're right. This is what's wrong. You have to fix it. And you have to tell the player that. You have to tell the other players that so that they know what's right and what's wrong.
So was he sensitive? And then when you, I'm sorry.
Of course not.
No, you weren't sensitive.
No, I think I only messed up on one thing.
One thing.
I think it was one thing.
You played
the whole
You fell down that one time.
No, that's been well documented. Thank you again for bringing it up. Okay. I appreciate that.
We got the video if you want to see.
Okay, thank you again for retweeting it. That makes me feel good inside. No, one of the questions was that you were, you know, I don't know who we were playing, but it was you're doing your normal thing on a Wednesday. Okay, asking questions, and for some reason I thought. You expected me to know who the second string strong safety was, which I probably should have known, but because he went to Nebraska. I think that's what it was. He went to Nebraska or something like that. And I was like the one guy that I was like, I don't have to know or worry about this guy. I think it was like okay, this guy's a second string strong safety, and he went to Nebraska, which is
true.
I went to Colorado. Yeah. Rivalry. Well, I don't know.
You didn't know him.
I did not know him. I think I gave you the what?
But the next week, I bet you know those guys.
Oh, hell yes. Oh, hell yes.
So there's always something to be said for that.
No, exactly.
Silver lining.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's not what you don't know. It's what it motivates
it
you
worked.
To do.
Yeah. No, it worked. It definitely worked. Now when I go through my life, I'm always looking for the second string strong safety.
I should read your
I got to finish this off. All right, so that was the question / drive of the week. That was brought to you by your Boston area Mercedes-Benz dealers.
Our conversation with the coach has been brought to you by Putnam Investments and the New England Patriots, proud partners, committed to an active game plan on and off the field. We'll see you next week, Bill. Have a happy Thanksgiving.
All right, same. Happy Thanksgiving. Same to you, listeners. Yep. Thanks.
See you. Bill Belichick right here on OMF.